recommended for them to achieve perfection, spiritual perfection, during each of those.
And if during Satya Yuga the process for achieving spiritual perfection is, very good, meditation. So Kapila Dev is teaching meditation, but it's not just, you know, Kali Yuga kind of meditation. It's meditation, very, very elevated meditation on the super soul, to the point where one is fixed in trance, seeing the form of the Lord, seeing the smile of the Lord, hearing the laughter of the Lord, feeling great ecstasy of happiness, of the Lord's happiness, and inspired to serve Him in pure devotion. So it leads to devotional service. Meditation that leads to pure devotional service. So his mother, Devahuti, has asked her son, Lord Kapila, or Kapila Dev, to describe that devotional service that results from that very elevated meditation, and is also that devotional service which is the result, the fruit, the byproduct of a perfectly executed philosophical system, because the philosophical system that Kapila Dev teaches along with meditation is called Sankhya. Sankhya. You've heard that word before? Sankhya? Sankhya? Have you heard that word before? Sankhya? It's found in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 2, Bhagavad Gita. Sankhya is something like what you do in school. I mean, so the result is different, but it's analysis. We analyze something and compare it with something else. We do that all the time. In practical life, we do it all the time. It's a function of the intellect. You discern one thing from another thing. That's what intellect does. And spiritual intellect is discerning matter and spirit. And the fruit of that philosophical system, Sankhya philosophical system, is devotional service. There's a nice verse, one of 700 nice verses from Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna says, after many, many lifetimes of developing your intellect, someone may, out of many, many, someone may come to the position of devotional service. And they'll come to the position of devotional service when they understand that Krishna is the source of everything. Say it the other way. When they understand that Krishna is the source of everything, they engage in devotional service. If they're honest. If they're dishonest, they'll do something else. But that's the position of integrity of a philosophical system. Devahuti says that right in her question. Devahuti, in her first question, her first statement is, this wonderful philosophical system called Sankhya. Sankhya means analysis of matter and categories of matter, analysis of spirit, categories of spirit. We belong over here, categories of spirit. And then fix the mind upon the Supreme Spirit. That's the Sankhya system in a nutshell. So Devahuti says, you've explained this wonderful Sankhya system, the fruit of which is devotional service. Can you please now describe devotional service, which is the fruit of the Sankhya system? He has already described it in chapter 25, lengthy description. The whole chapter is description. But she wants to hear it again, no problem. He's ready to describe it again. So as he's describing it again, he's describing varieties of devotional service. We did this one in 81. Varieties. And then there's sub-varieties of those 81. How do we get to number 81? Well, there's three modes of nature, and there's nine processes of devotional service. Do any of you boys, or on the girls' side, girls, know what those nine processes are? Some of you look panic-stricken that I'm asking. What are the nine processes? Yes, you know the nine? Vishnu Smaranam, that's three. Padasevanam is four. That's five. Sakyam. Atmanivedanam. So those are the hearing, chanting, remembering. Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu Smaranam. That's three. Padasevanam, worshipping the lotus feet. Archanam, we discussed Archanam the other evening, deity worship. Bandhanam, prayers. Dasyam, service. Sakyam, friendship. Atmanivedanam, surrendering everything. So nine processes. Three modes of nature. So three times nine is 27. But we also then discussed that there's lower, medium, and upper manifestations within those modes of nature. The lower mode of ignorance, medium, upper position of the mode of ignorance. So there's divisions of three within the three modes of nature. Remember that? The topic was, the way that Vishwanath Chakravarti described it was, there's intention within each mode, and according to intention one may ascribe lower, intermediate, and upper intention. And then, so 3 times 27 makes 81. Is that right? 3 times 27 is 81. Is that right? Yeah? 3 times 27 is 81. Yeah, okay. And then there's unlimited varieties of those. But, you know, it's for keep things not overly complicated. 81 varieties, and Kapila Deva's teaching Devahuti what they are, and the encouragement is, or the assignment is, to go beyond those. And those 81 varieties have something in common. And the something in common is an interest that's separate from the interest of the Supreme Lord. There were two terms that were used. Binadrik. Bina means separate. Binadrik. Seeing something separate. Binadrik. Seeing something separate. Somebody can remember the other term? I can't hear. Pratak bhava. Pratak means separate. Bhava means, you know, disposition of mind. Feeling. Bhava. Pratak bhava. So there's the sameness of interest. That is, so bhakti, the essence of bhakti, the seed of bhakti is, I want to serve Krishna. And then there's a mix that says, well, I want to serve Krishna because I want such and such. It may not be what Krishna wants, but I want. And what can I do? Because I want. So here I go, devotional service where I want. Therefore, the standard of pure devotional service, which we're going to hear in this morning's verse, is no separate interest. What does that mean? It's discussed, yesterday morning, we covered a verse where from chapter 25. Chapter 25 is devotional service, where there is no separate interest. Their interest is one interest. The interest of the lover is the interest of the beloved. The interest of the beloved is the interest of the lover. So their minds are matching. The interests are matching. But the interest is submission unto the beloved. That's bhakti. With no separate interest. That's pure devotional service. So that's what we're going to be hearing. The modes are gone. They're not influencing or affecting. They may be like swirling around you, like wind or rain or, you know, some commotion out there. But inside, fixed. One interest. The Supreme Lord's interest. And then all of one's actions follow that. Whatever is the Supreme Lord's interest. That's bhakti. That's bhakti that's unmixed. Okay, so that's what we'll read this morning. Lord Kapila's teaching on this. It's chapter 29, texts number 11 and 12. And it's the title of the chapter is Explanation of Devotional Service. So, Kapila Dev, now we know who Lord Kapila is. He's an incarnation of Krishna during Satya Yuga. The son of Devahuti and Kardava Muni. So he's now presenting pure devotional service, unmixed. Translation. The manifestation of unadulterated devotional service is exhibited when one's mind is at once attracted to hearing the transcendental name and qualities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead who is residing in everyone's heart. Just as the water of the Ganges flows naturally down towards the ocean, such devotional ecstasy, uninterrupted by any material condition, flows towards the Supreme Lord. So there's Krishna Katha, and this unalloyed devotee is passing by a place where there's Krishna Katha. They just are drawn like iron filings to a magnet. Spontaneously. They don't even have to make an effort. Hint, we're not there yet. Because we have to make an effort. We have to make an effort to bring the mind to the sound of Krishna's name. Not only one time. Again and again and again and again, because the mind is chanchala, means flickering. It goes here, it goes there, it goes so many places, except we bring the mind to the, so that's a sadhana practice. It's not something lamentable, it's one of the stages of bhakti. And by that seed of effort to practice sadhana attentively, Krishna reciprocates by cleansing those other intentions, leaving just the one intention. And when that one intention becomes matured, it becomes this unmixed, and the mind just goes. A really wonderful example of this, there are many. Pundarik Vidyanidhi, one of Lord Chaitanya's wonderful associates. This is from Chaitanya Charitamrita. He was a householder. He had not only wealth, he had opulence. And externally it appeared that he was sunk in sense gratification, it looked like. At least it looked like that to Gadadhar Pandit. Because when Gadadhar was very small, like you guys, he had, you know, just in school, he was in one of the schools, he was very detached from sense gratification from childhood. He was that kind of a devotee, very, very, very detached. And he loved Krishna very, very much, even as a small boy. So one of his friends, named Mukunda, Mukunda said, there's a great saintly person that's come to town. He moved from the same place where my family used to live. Now he's moved here too. And I'd like to take you to meet him. So Mukunda was a friend of Gadadhar, and Gadadhar thought, well, my friend Mukunda wants me to meet this person. He must be, you know, up there, like really special. So they went. And when they went, Gadadhar was holding his head, saying, look at this person. He looks like a sense gratifier. He's not just sitting on a little seat here. He's lying down on this nice, cushy thing, white silk pillowcases, really puffy silicate pillowcases, with a whole bunch of different drinks and beverages, and someone fanning him, and lavish clothing, and my goodness, let me out of here. This is, I don't want to be around a person like this. Mukunda, why did he bring me here? So Mukunda knew the mind of his good friend. So what Mukunda did, and Mukunda was a really good singer, so Mukunda started singing a verse from Srimad Bhagavatam, just one verse from Srimad Bhagavatam that was describing Krishna's walking through the forest in Vrindavan with Balaram the cowherd boys. It was describing the features of Krishna, his clothing and his mood and his eyes, and there was a blue flower over the corner of his ear. Krishna was smiling. That's what the verse is describing. Very beautiful verse. And he sang it. And hearing that verse, Pundarik Vidyanidhi, his mind, he was on this platform, his mind just went to Krishna. And it was so deeply absorbed in the ecstatic mood of devotion for Krishna that he lost external consciousness. He fell off of that little platform thing that he was sitting on, knocked over all the drinks on the table, and was rolling on the ground in ecstasy. It wasn't an artificial show. It was symptoms of ecstatic love. So Mukunda continued to sing other verses, and Pundarik Vidyanidhi continued to be in this ecstatic state. And then Mukunda understood, because he was an elevated person, he understood, whoa, he's not a sense gratifier. It looked like, but inside, his real quality is he's on this topmost platform. So Mukunda stopped singing. Eventually, Pundarik Vidyanidhi came to external consciousness. Mukunda apologized profusely. He didn't do anything. He didn't even say anything. He just thought something. So he apologized profusely for those critical thoughts, offensive thoughts. So it was apology. He honored his actual position and requested him now that I recognize as a means of acknowledging your forgiveness of these bad thoughts I had, please accept me as your disciple. So Gadadhar Pandit, you know, in our Panchatattva, Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Srivas Adi Gaur Bhaktivinoda, Gadadhar's spiritual master was Pundarik Vidyanidhi, because he was on this platform. And Gadadhar was aspiring for that platform, so he wanted to receive the mercy of one on that platform. The mind spontaneously just goes, like the metaphor in the verse is, the river and the Ganges, someone doesn't have to tell it, okay, now you can flow downstream, please. And then Ganges says, yes, sir, I'll flow downstream because you said so. It just goes. Zoom, zoom, just rushing downstream. So similarly, on this, the symptom of someone in this unmixed with the modes, with no interest separate from the interest of the Lord, that quality of bhakti is exhibited by what the mind does. So they can go reverse. The mind, or the person with the mind that's influenced by the mode of goodness, will be like this. I mean, the mode of goodness is a nice mode. Better than the other ones, specifically, according to Bhagavad Gita. However, from the previous verse, when the devotee worships the Supreme Lord and offers the results of his activities in order to free himself from the inebrieties of fruitive activities, his devotion is in the mode of goodness. And we read the person, well, Vishwanath writes, the person in the mode of goodness has this motive. He wants to be free from karma. He's a liberationist. Not like, I want Krishna's service. I want out of here. I don't like this place. Let me out of here. His interest in his own interest. And, oh, he'll help me get my interest. Okay, I'll serve him because I want my interest. Get the idea. Just some appreciation that Lord Chaitanya taught the same thing, because Lord Chaitanya's teachings are rooted in the message of the Bhagavatam. You could say it either way. The Bhagavatam presents Lord Chaitanya's teachings, or Lord Chaitanya's teachings are rooted in the Srimad Bhagavatam. They're identical. So here's a nice verse where Lord Chaitanya is, excuse me, where Kapila is teaching the same as Lord Chaitanya. The language is different. Purport. So this is texts 11 and 12 combined. The basic principle of this unadulterated pure devotional service is love of Godhead. Mad guna shruti matrena, from the verse, means just after hearing about the transcendental qualities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, these qualities are called nirguna. What does guna mean? Guna? There are three gunas, or modes of nature, right? And nirguna means no modes of nature. Right? Nirguna. So the qualities of Krishna are nirguna. And when one's mind touches nirguna and becomes attracted, that's bhakti. The Supreme Lord is uncontaminated by the modes of material nature, therefore he is attractive to the pure devotee. There is no need to practice meditation to attain such attraction. The pure devotee is already in the transcendental stage, and the affinity between him and the Supreme Personality of Godhead is natural and is compared to the Ganges water flowing toward the sea. The flow of the Ganges water cannot be stopped by any condition. Similarly, if your devotee's attraction for the transcendental name, form, pastimes of the Supreme Godhead cannot be stopped by any material condition. The word anvichchana, without interruptions. Chinna means like separated or broken. Anvichchana, it's uninterrupted. The mind just... So here comes an obstacle. You know, some calamity, some problem, something. Somebody yells at you, or somebody does something mean, or something happens. Normally, what happens, the mind goes to that. Whatever. And some feeling, and we all get all absorbed in that something. The unadulterated devotee is like the Ganges. The Ganges just keeps flowing. The power of the attraction for Krishna is unstoppable. Nothing can start it, nothing can stop it. Second paragraph. The word ahaituki means without reason. Here's another Sanskrit term, hetu. Hetu means cause. And from a cause there's an effect. So a high tukhi means no cause. It's causeless. Why does the mind go to Krishna? Because the mind's attracted to Krishna. Doesn't take a material impetus to cause it. Conditions are nice. My job is secure. My grades in school are good. Everyone's treating me nice and smiling. Now my mind can go to Krishna. And if any of those things are missing, then my mind doesn't go to Krishna, my mind goes to those things. But I took this unmixed devotion, nothing can check it. Without reason. A pure devotee does not render loving service to the personality of Godhead for any cause or any benefit, material or spiritual. Because the previous one is the spiritual benefit. I want liberation. I want out of here. Let me out of this place. It's crazy. So I'll take up devotional service because I don't like crazy. I like, you know, nice. So pure devotional service isn't motivated like that. This is the first symptom of unalloyed devotion. Anyamilashantrishunyam. He has no desire to fulfill by rendering devotional service. Such devotional service is meant for the Purushottama. Purusha means person. And Uttama means topmost. You put those two together. Purusha and Uttama becomes Purushottama. Who's the topmost person? Krishna. So devotional service is meant for Krishna. Purushottama. Sometimes pseudo-devotees show devotion to many demigods, thinking the forms of the demigods to be the same as the Supreme Personality of Godhead's form. It is specifically mentioned herein, however, that bhakti, devotional service, is meant only for the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Narayana Vishnu, or Krishna, not for anyone else. And then the last paragraph, one more Sanskrit word from the verse, avyavahita. Avyavahita means without cessation. So there's nothing material that can start it, there's nothing material that can stop it, and it continues uninterrupted. Avyavahita. A pure devotee must engage in the service of the Lord 24 hours a day. How do you do that? You don't sleep? That means even when you sleep, because if your mind is filled like this standard, pure, even when you're sleeping, there's because the mind has been cleansed, the thoughts go to a devotional service. That happens when the purified state. Some of our devotees, that they do lots of sankirtan. Like there's a group of devotees in New York that for 3.5 years, almost 4 years now, they have a program where they're on Harinam Sankirtan 365 days of the year. In New York it's possible because you go in the subway. Just go to different subways so the people don't get, you know. So imagine if that's what you did every day, Sankirtan. What would you dream about? At least some of the time, you dream about Sankirtan. That's what happens. That my in the that's and they're just for practicing. In the pure stage, that's where the mind goes. The mind goes to thoughts of Krishna because all the waking time of the day is thoughts about Krishna for the pure devotee. So 24 hours a day, giving the body some rest, the mind still goes to Krishna. Using the body in service to Krishna, the mind is upon Krishna. That's advanced stage. His life is so molded that in every minute and in every second he engages in some sort of devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Another meaning of the word avyavahita is that the interest of the devotee and the interest of the Supreme Lord are on the same level. We discussed about interest yesterday and then summary again this morning. Intention. Such spontaneous service to the Supreme Lord is transcendental and is never contaminated by the material modes of nature. These are the symptoms of pure devotional service, which is free from all contamination of material nature. And just to add a little bit, I'm going to very quickly read. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's statement. Lakshanam Bhakti Yogasya, that's how the verse begins. Lakshanam means the characteristics. The characteristics of pure devotional service are, that he lists them. Translation, because the mind, hearing about my qualities, flows continuously to me, the Supreme Lord residing in the heart of all people, just as the Ganges flows to the ocean, it is said that the quality of bhakti beyond the moods, beyond the gunas, is absence of results other than bhakti and lack of obstructions from other processes. Interesting way of saying same thing. Whenever attraction I may have had for something, when bhakti awakens, that attraction for that something that may have been there previously, it's just superseded by this very strong attraction for Krishna. And as far as results, well, I may have previously been interested in, I don't know, something. And that interest in terms of results has now been elevated to the pleasure of Krishna only. And within the pleasure of Krishna, all those other interests are fulfilled. You have $1,000,000, you have $10. And $100. And $1,000. So this is it's $1,000,000 solution. The spiritual solution to things that people think are important. They're not neglected, but it's a subset. It's already included. It's a nice purport by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. If you recall from yesterday morning, Vishwanath quoted a verse from chapter 25 that describes pure devotional service and its symptoms. He says, here it's being spoken again. It's reinforcing what was already spoken. The mind continually flows to me, the Supreme Lord, situated in all the antak karanas. Karana means causes. Anta means, you know, something outside. Mahir Nishingo, Hridaye Nishingo. So there's something outside, something inside. This is, you know, causes that are outside. People are cold, so they put a jacket on. It's hot, so they put a fan on. So there's something outside, or you do something. So there's behaviors that are stimulated by something outside. And then there's behaviors where something that's stimulated inside. When that bhakti is fully awakened, that's what's moving things. You may put your jacket on. You may put your fan on. But your absorption is not, I want to feel comfortable. You do things with a higher meditation. It displaces absorption in the temporary. You do things, but that's not your focus. And that's it. He's saying that state is attained by hearing what we do when we attend Bhagavatam class and chant our japa, for example. The meaning, because the mind flows continuously to me just by bhakti yoga, with hearing and other processes beyond the modes, the quality of bhakti is said to be ahituki and avyahita. So now he's going to explain these terms as Prabhupada did. Just as the water of the Ganges, even though turned back by the ocean's waves, it's at the mouth of the Ganges, it's flowing into the ocean. The ocean's waves are pushing it back. It keeps flowing. That's the ocean. What to speak of somebody holding their arm out, trying to stop the Ganges or build a dam. Good luck. It's going to flow over the dam. The Ganges is going to keep flowing. So similarly, the mind flows only to me, although allured by me with offerings of kingdom, opulences, and other things. As the example of the Ganges suggests, that the mind of the devotee, like the Ganges, is swift, cooling, and pure, and worthy of worship. What are bhakti's qualities? So he goes through, he again details these ahituki and avyahita. Prabhupada did like that. So that's the standard of pure devotional service. So we need not lament that we're not there yet. It's good to acknowledge we're not there yet, and it gives us like a standard to strive for. That's the standard, and we're not there yet. So now we need the cleansing activity. We need to do our sadhana activity very carefully, knowing that's awaiting. That by that cleansing process, that's where we're headed. Just stay with the process. Difficulty might be there because we're attached or something. We're a little weak or something. There's a problem that looks so big, you know, we can't pay attention to what the goal is or something. But if we stay with the process, despite those things mentioned and others, that's the result of sadhana bhakti is bhava bhakti and then prema bhakti. That's where the process takes us. Any comments or questions? Anyone? Yeah?
Previous class, you mentioned when one has a bhakti, knowledge automatically comes to him. And say we don't have a pure bhakti, but say we have some knowledge, and we apply that knowledge, that becomes a realized knowledge. So in that way, by knowing knowledge, if someone has a knowledge and if that applies, is that also process for developing a pure bhakti?
Yes. Just a little comment is there's knowledge that's theoretical and there's knowledge that's realized. The one way that Prabhupada makes that differentiation is jnanam and vijnanam, knowledge and realized knowledge. So the knowledge that awakens by bhakti is the realized kind. Supposing someone is illiterate, they can't read. Knowledge can awaken within them, but even without reading something. Like, you know, the nice example of that is the illiterate brahmana, which is a contradiction of terms, but the illiterate brahmana in Sri Rangam that Lord Chaitanya saw He was studying Bhagavad Gita and crying. And Lord Chaitanya asked him, "Why are you crying?" And the man said, "Well, you know, don't make fun of me." He said, "No, people make fun of me because they know I'm illiterate and I sit and read Bhagavad Gita, but I sit and read Bhagavad Gita because my spiritual master told me to read Bhagavad Gita, and I try to do that even I'm illiterate because it was his instruction. Then please tell me why you're crying." "Well, I can't understand the words because I'm illiterate, but when I the picture of Krishna taking the position of the chariot driver of his devotee, Arjuna, I think of the love that Krishna has for Arjuna and the love that Arjuna has for Krishna. And it's stirring these emotions of love for Krishna." Right? You're familiar with that. So then Lord Chaitanya said, "You are the scholar, the true scholar of Bhagavad Gita." So there are different approaches. So that teaching from first canto, that knowledge spontaneously arises, is the realized kind. And that any kind of realized understanding must be confirmed by scripture. I may get some realization of something. If that something isn't confirmed in scripture, then I can't hold it as being valid. Okay? Yeah. Something else? Yeah?
Good morning. Thank you. You're talking about explaining
Yeah.
Bhakti's causes and how a true devotee's mind
naturally goes
to Krishna. Yeah. Irrespective of the external circumstances.
Right. You got it.
Maharaj, for me, it's the other way around. Okay. My mind just dwells on the external situation.
Uh-huh.
And not only that, theoretically, after hearing from you and scriptures, I know that I have to take shelter of the Lord and cultivate the mood of dependence. But I don't do it. I mean, this strong doership mentality manifests in me, and I continue to dwell and live there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how I can find solution to that external situation. There is this knowledge, but it's separate, I know I'm helpless and I'm limited and all this, but I still try to put my fingers forward.
The question you're asking, the language is different. But it's the same question that Radha Dutti asked the other day. Same question. And same answer to the same question. And as I did with her, I'll forward to you this nice verse from the 11th canto that I think, you know, wraps it up very nicely. It's again, I'll paraphrase, "My dear Lord, I have all confidence in this process of devotional service that is awakened through the hearing and chanting process. And by that awakening of bhakti, by the hearing and chanting process, I have come to understand that the temporary nature of material attraction, and in fact, it leads to misery. Nonetheless, I still have material attraction, and it's operating in my life. So let me go on." This is the resolution, the resolve. "Let me go on with this process of hearing and chanting, knowing fully this other attraction will lead only to misery, but it's there within me. So let me go on with faith in the process of bhakti, knowing that in the course of time that will become cleansed." It's not complacency. That's not going to take away or reduce or eliminate worldly attraction. Complacency won't do that. It's like, you know, you're in the kitchen and you've got a pot that has something caked on the outside and the inside of the pot from your cooking, and you just leave it in the sink, and now it's going to get clean just by leaving it in the sink. No, run some water and do some scrubbing, and it may take a bunch of scrubbing, and eventually the pot will become clean by the scrubbing process. That's, you know, I have faith in the scrubbing process that the pot will become clean. Similarly, the bhakti process is such that even I'm way over here and the goal is way over there, the process is effective. So let me say with the process, with faith in the process. Dhairyat. Read that little section from Nectar of Instruction. Confidence in the process, so I can carry on with enthusiasm, utsahan, and be patient for the result, nishchayat, because I have conviction in the process. Something else? Yes? Yeah.
You hear about chanting and hearing is very important. How much is reading important?
It's a category of hearing. It's recorded hearing. Reading. Hearing doesn't mean, in other words, just turn on your MP3 player and listen. It includes your recorded discussions of our founder Acharya. And then that's meant for discussion. So after you read, discuss with others, then there's that kind of hearing also. Shravanam Kirtanam. Yes?
In the Uttamaya temple, Raji has a problem to send Krishna to class, and he often quotes saying that you have to pray until everything depends on Krishna, but when it comes to action, you have to do everything that depends on Krishna. So I always had difficulty understanding this.
Well, it's here's another way of saying the same thing that maybe it's easier to understand, but it's the same thing. In the pastime of Mother Jasoda trying to bind Krishna, Damodar Leela, as if it depends on her, she's trying to bind Krishna. And the rope doesn't go around Krishna's waist, so she gets more rope, ties the rope with some more rope, and it doesn't go around Krishna. By the same 2 inches, she gets some more rope, doesn't go around Krishna, by the same 2 inches. And she marvels to her friends. I'm astonished. Not only doesn't go around Krishna, but it's always the same 2 inches. No matter how much I endeavor, no matter how much I'm acting as if it's depending upon me, it's always the same 2 inches. It's astonishing. But she keeps acting as if it's depending on her. She's striving. Abhyasa. Or a devotional effort. Prayasa is another term. She's endeavoring. And Krishna just removes some of his potencies and exhibits other potencies. According to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he withdraws his Icha Shakti and Srup Shakti, and he extends his Kripa Shakti. Because you can't bind Krishna, or practically speaking, do devotional service without Krishna's mercy. We're dependent upon Krishna's mercy. But we want to invoke Krishna's mercy. And one of the ways to invoke Krishna's mercy is with devotion. We continue to try to do our service nicely. And so Vishwanath says that those 2 inches represent one's effort and Krishna's mercy. In the devotional service, both are required. So our consciousness, going back to Braj Bihari's statement, we're dependent upon Krishna's mercy. But supposing, okay, I'm just dependent upon Krishna's mercy. I'll just sit in my hammock and sip lemonade and, la-di-da-di-da. Because everything depends on Krishna's mercy. When Krishna wants, I'll chant. When Krishna wants, I'll go back to Godhead. When Krishna wants, so many books will be distributed. When Krishna wants, the breakfast will be cooked and offered. When Krishna wants. for a devotee, there isn't material existence. You know, there's somebody goes to work and somebody goes to school and somebody stays home and cleans the house and does the housework. That you can say that's our material existence. But for a devotee, that's our devotional lives, just manifested variously. So those material becomes spiritualized. It becomes devotional service if we're in proper consciousness. So yes, it does extend to every sphere of life. On a battlefield, or in the kitchen, or in the workplace, or in the classroom, or wherever we are. Okay. Yes?
Based upon previous class on Sunday, good and evil, it's a ground zero level question.
Good versus evil question. Okay.
Ground zero level.
Ground zero level.
Yeah.
Yes, we heard this the other day. Is it the same ground zero or a different one? Different ground zero. So they use a different term.
Yes. Maharaj, you mentioned that the source for evil and good is the same Supreme Personality of God.
The source of everything is one source.
Yes. So even for evil and good.
Even for everything.
Yes. And for evil, I feel that it's more attractive, like for any person, irrespective of the universal, like Chinese or like whatever it is, like alcohol, women, like all those things are very attractive for any religion or like any country or anything. But to understand good, the person should be in the modus of goodness or in a transcendental fact. If you show a deity and if you show a woman, people are attracted to women. To understand the deity, like they have to be in the mood of goodness or they have to be in a transcendental platform. When the source is from the same thing, that why there is a small partiality of that, there is a condition, there is if class, that only if you are in mood of goodness or if you are in mood of transcendental platform, you can see the good of God, but all the bad things in the world are like it's readily attractable and like it will give you immediate happiness too. So why there is a if condition?
Well, the premise of your question I don't agree with. So therein lies some initial confusion. I'll give two examples. One is people that come to our temple. Their first time. They may be very attracted. They may be repulsed. They may be neutral towards the deity. But they may be attracted. It's not because they're in the quality of goodness. It's because the deity is powerful and somehow their submissiveness to that power of the deity has penetrated. But it's not because they're in the quality of goodness. Your premise is only those in the quality of goodness or transcendence can appreciate. Another nice example is, I forget his name, one of Ramanujacharya's disciples who, before he became his disciple, he was a wrestler who was one of the chief assistants of some king, and he had a beautiful, super beautiful wife, and there was some festival where Ramanujacharya and his associates were attending, and it was so obviously noticeable he was right out front just staring at his beautiful wife or girlfriend or whatever, right as the deity was passing by, and Ramanujacharya called for the man to come. The man didn't even, when the messenger tapped him on the shoulder, he couldn't even pay attention to the man tapping on his shoulder because he was too much fixed on the beauty of his beloved. Finally he got through and said, Ramanuja wants to speak with you. Ramanuja brought him over and said, what's happening? What was it that you were seeing that was so absorbing? The Lord passing by and all the blaring of the horns and banging on the drums and you just, were oblivious. or the eyes of my beloved is, I've never seen anything. So Ramanuja said, if I could show you something more beautiful, what would you think of that? Would you just like go with me? So he asked. So he brought him before the deity of Ranganath, and that had him open his eyes, and he saw the deity of Ranganath, and he became convinced. He became a pure devotee. Although he wasn't in the quality of goodness, he wasn't in transcendence. And his girlfriend or wife, she also became devotee. Very, very, very special devotee. I can't remember his name. Somebody know his name?
Dhanur Das.
Dhanur Das, yeah. So the within your question, there's a premise that I question. Now, even if you rephrase the premise, because I kind of like blocked out a bunch of what you were saying because the premise was not okay. But becoming attracted to Krishna is not dependent upon something material. It's not dependent upon good karma or good birth or being in the mode of goodness or anything. It's dependent upon being the recipient of mercy and saying yes when that mercy comes. So the deliverer of mercy is important. The quality of the deliverer of mercy. But even still, someone who's not so equipped as a deliverer of mercy can be very effective in delivering mercy. Just by that I mean, statistics show, I'll say it in two ways. Sociologists in the early days of the Hare Krishna movement did extensive studies in the Hare Krishna movement. And one of the things they studied is how people became devotees by interviewing devotees. And an overwhelming number of devotees became devotees by meeting somebody who was not such a serious practitioner. But they knew about devotional service, and they were going, rah, rah, you know, go check it out. So they went and checked it out. And through that person, who wasn't such a transparent, elevated, saintly individual, helped them become introduced to Krishna consciousness. Or another way, second way of saying the same thing is, networking is a big way of how Krishna consciousness is spread. Somebody knows somebody who knows somebody. And you know that, you know, several times removed, somebody practices Krishna consciousness more than the person who originally contacted, you know, their social network. Because they just said yes instead of no or maybe. Although the transmitter was not necessarily, you know, a pure devotee, a transparent Shuddha Bhakta. That doesn't discount the importance of association with sadhu to go further. But to begin devotional service and have an attraction for Krishna can happen like that. In fact, there's the Vartmad Pradarshaka Guru is one who just points the way. That's a scriptural explanation of how someone can assist one on the path of bhakti. It's somehow receiving mercy is the requirement, not mode of goodness or transcendence. The premise of the question is misleading. There isn't prior qualification needed. Just somehow receive mercy. And now comes this other, you know, question about, well, what about, as if something depends on us. That's the execution of devotional service. And that's the mood of devotion of the devotee as they're carrying forward that seed that they received from a devotee. It's the hearing and chanting, watering of that seed, making some effort to carry on with the hearing and chanting process. Like your question. Now, I don't know if I've answered your question. Have I answered your question?
Yes, basically my understanding is bhakti is coming as a seed from devotees, a few devotees or like, you know.
So someone that's carrying bhakti. Someone that's carrying bhakti. That's how bhakti begins.
I understand the fact, but like, you know, when the source is from the same, you know, why there is like more attraction of all the bad things, the evil things.
Of all the what?
Bad things for the evil things means like, you know, alcohol or women or any of the bad qualities. Or it's like
that's the modes of nature. Those attractions. And when the modes shift, those attractions fade. So how do we change the modes of nature? There's a whole half a chapter in Krishna's teachings to Uddhava how one can change one's modes of nature, and then those attractions change. It's a mode of nature matter. Now the Vastas become attracted to Krishna and all of that goes. Turn on the bright light and all darkness goes. That's our bhakti process. You know, the alcohol and the women and the evil and the just, you know, some of Lord Chaitanya's associates, Jagai Madhai, were absorbed in all bad things. It just stopped. Screeching halt stopped because they received Lord Chaitanya's mercy and Lord Nityananda's mercy. Darkness is dispelled by light. Same is the theme from the discussion on Sunday. Anything else? Yes?
Overwhelming. Especially when we come to know about the anathas and the sacrifices, like it looks like very long way to go. How do we gain strength?
How do you do what?
How do we gain strength?
How do you gain strength? By the bhakti process. By association. You want to get warm, what should you do? Stand near a fire, you get warm. You want to get strength, what should you do? Take association. You get strength from those that have strength. And that's the mercy part, and then you act according to those things that you've understood. Both. That's how it works. You know, you just go back in time before you even knew what the word anartha means. And then, you know, before you knew that there were anarthas within your heart, you're just going along with life. Was it easier? No, we're dealing with all that stuff and just, you know, getting moved around like a pawn on a chessboard. Just being moved by those things. Oblivious. So now you know that those things, and you know the means of approval. So it's celebration time. It's not discouragement time. Don't be weak-hearted. That's what Krishna said to Arjuna. Don't be weak-hearted. Where is this weakness of heart? Hridaya dorbalyam. According to Haridas Thakur, one of the principal anarthas is in this category of hridaya dorbalyam. Now I know what I need to do and I become weakened in the heart. There was a time when you weren't married and then you got married. And then you realize what it means to be a wife. So if you get weakness of heart, I don't want to be, I have all these responsibilities of being married. And then there's children. Oh, I didn't know I was have all those responsibilities of being a mother. Now you're a devotee and I realize, oh, there's all these anarthas in my heart. It's an opportunity for service. And making yourself fit to be wife and mother and, you know, a person, a transcendentalist in this world, that you can give to others and because you receive that benefit. Okay, last question. Yeah?
Maharaj, this chapter description of the explanation of devotional service is very broad, etc.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
And it seems like everybody is doing a devotional service, but
yeah,
you don't know that Krishna. Like, you know, person in mode of ignorance.
Okay. Okay.
Not Krishna, but there is something that
something.
There is some service.
Well, the world is like that though, isn't it?
And then connecting to that, the description that you told about how Kadadat Pandit he thought something, you know, oh, he's a sensitive kind of bad thought in the mind, but so seeing so many, you know, person in mode of ignorance, I may get some thoughts back with both hands. Here, you know, Kadadat Pandit being devotee, he apologized and asked for forgiveness. And you know, often in a devotee circle also sometimes some bad thoughts fly by in the mind. So is it necessary that every time I have to go apologize for everyone?
No.
How do I deal with it?
Here, I can say many things, but here's three. One, we're not held responsible for our bad thoughts, thank God, in the age of Kali. In previous ages, one is. But if one dwells on that thought, then thinking can easily turn to feeling, can turn to willing, can turn to acting, and then we are. So we move from that, knowing that you're not responsible for that thought, move from that thought and go to a higher thought. You know, so here's a higher thought, number two. The behavior is not the person. The person is the person. And the behavior may be not nice, a mode of ignorance behavior. But that's not the person. So we make a distinction between the soul and the covering of the soul. And feel some compassion, concern, and some well-wishing to the soul that is subjected to this such a foreign covering. Then you can have a different feeling towards the same person, and even, you know, the behavior. I may not like the behavior. Behavior may be reprehensible. But poor soul. And then that poor soul is then bashing into other souls because of that motive nature that they're influenced by and affecting or infecting those other persons. How unfortunate. And then what are you to do? Because, you know, you're not in control of someone else's free will and the laws of karma that are and the modes of nature that are acting upon them. So what are you to do? Same thing that Vyas indicates. Propagate Bhagavad Dharma. That's what you can do. Take shelter of something. Take shelter of sat. And that's the best means of sat, of being of service to that person and so many other persons. And action, the best of actions. Take shelter of Bhagavad Dharma and extend that opportunity to others within your capacity. Okay, thank you very much. Prabhupada.